following material was performed under extreme mental duress and lack of prescribed medication.
You know, there's a lot more to comedy than what you see on a stage.
I like the idea of comedy at night. Rule number one, attack the audience verbally.
I'm not normal. She should have warned you.
I emptied my case. They didn't boo me or anything. It's just every time I came out from behind the case, another 10 people had left. And man, I was ready to hang myself. I'm not kidding, man. I measured the light cord in the room and everything.
From Wits End Comedy Club in Westminster, Colorado, it's The Green Room. A chance for you to meet the comedians coming into Wits End, and a place where we talk about all things comedy, both on and off the stage. Well, folks, you found us yet again. This is Vilmos, and you are listening to The Green Room, coming from live and recorded from Wits End Comedy Club in Westminster, Colorado. All things comedy talked about here, how we get there, how we got there, how we didn't get there, what we missed, what we didn't miss, everything. Also, want to remind you guys that we don't edit our material here. If you're in the cubicle at work, don't forget to turn us down just a hair so the uptight asshole next door to you doesn't get pissed off and complain about you to your boss. So our guest this week, it's her first time in the club. I was lucky enough to meet her last year in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where we worked together. The only comic I know that takes a gift bag up on stage, ladies and gentlemen, Christine Stedman. Welcome to the Green Room, Christine.
Good morning.
Yes, it is morning. And you are actually the latest that I have actually done one of these. I managed to get everybody else out early, but we had phone problems on Saturday or Sunday. So we had to wait till you got to Illinois where they actually had phone service that worked pretty well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I'm an Illinois boy, right? I grew up outside of Peoria.
Oh, quit bragging.
Well, you know, what can I say? It was a town of 550 people. They have a small monument to me there. Basically, it's a gopher I buried when I was four.
Oh, lovely. I'll have to check that out the next time I'm up that way.
The only problem is it true? Did you play Peoria, just for the record?
Yes, and, I have.
And is it true, do you think, that if it plays there, it plays anywhere?
Not at all.
No. Do you think it has anything to do with the club?
I think that probably has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, I want people to get a chance to know you a little bit. Let's start out with some of the basics. How long have you been doing comedy?
Well, I count the first day I went on stage and did my first open mic is when my comedy career started.
Uh-huh.
And that anniversary's coming up this month. June 30th will be 15 years.
Wow. And you remember that you have written down the first day. A lot of comics do. I don't even remember my first time.
Well, I thought it was important to remember that day. I don't know why. Sounds a little anal, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. A lot of guys call it their comedy birthday, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I remember about mine was that it was after the Super Bowl, and there were like 10 people in the audience.
Oh.
So tell me, my experience is horrific. How was yours, and what was it?
Well, what I did is now I can't tell you how old I was when I started comedy, since I told you I've been doing it 15 years. So,
well, let's just say you were 14.
Okay, yeah, let's say that. For then, when people see me, they're going to go, "Damn, she looks bad." but you know what? I did start later than most people, and when I made up my mind to do it, I thought, well, I'm going to go watch the open mic nights first. And I went every week for about a month and watched them. And they were pretty bad. And I thought, well, I can at least do this.
Yeah.
So the first time I went up, I did 3 minutes. That's what they told me to do, 3 minutes of material. It went very well. The good thing was that people came up to me afterwards and said, "Well, you were really funny. We wanted to hear more." Well, that was all the encouragement I needed. So once I heard that, I was like, well, let me sit down and write something.
Nice. So you actually, a lot of people don't have a very good experience. And the other thing that happens with new comics is they have a good first time, and then they run into the, like this long streak of bad.
Right.
You know, did that happen to you, or was it always pretty pleasant?
You know what? I guess it was pretty good. I mean, of course, I did have times where, you know, some weren't as good as the other, but I, in the beginning, it really wasn't horrible.
Wow. Mine were all horrific.
I think if it was, I might have bailed if it was, like, you know, really traumatic. So, you know, I did have some times where, you know, people just stared at me, but for the most part, it wasn't that bad.
And where was your first club? Was it Chicago, or because you're in Illinois, right? That's where you live.
Yeah, I live in Illinois, but I just say I'm from St. Louis because I live like 12 miles across the river from downtown St. Louis, so I'm in that area.
So your first one was a Funny Bone?
No, it was a place called Art Beloves Comedy, etc.
Ah, and is that club still in existence? I don't think, right?
What's that?
That club's still in existence?
No, it's been sold to a Funny Bone.
Okay, so you actually were in the Funny Bones before it was a Funny Bone.
Right, but see, that Art Beloves is where I did my first open mic, and then I ventured over to St. Louis to the Funny Bone, and at the time we had a Catch a Rising Star comedy club. So I was really lucky because of all the open mics, the Funny Bone, there were two clubs. Then we had Art Beloves and Catch a Rising Star, so I was able to do an open mic almost three times every week somewhere.
Wow, that's great, because that's an opportunity that a lot of guys don't get.
I know. I was very lucky to be able to do that because people have to, you know, some clubs have them for, you know, maybe the first Wednesday of the month or something, and that's it.
Sure. And what were you doing, or what was your life before you started doing comedy? What kind of work did you do?
I was actually working in the drug and alcohol rehab unit of a hospital before that.
Really?
Yes, and I tried to be funny there. I would try to joke around with the patients, and then I found out that when people are detoxing, they have no sense of humor. So I decided I'd take it to where they're drinking heavily.
Right, so you went from the guys trying to get clean to the ones that didn't care.
Yeah, I went to the people who the more they drank, the funnier I was compared to the people who were drying out and didn't find me amusing at all.
Huh? And did you know that you wanted to be a comedian for a long time, or is it something that just kind of banged you in the head one day? And
no, I knew this. I got to say that I wanted to do this. This is going to sound weird, but I wanted to do this ever since I was around 12 or 13.
No, that doesn't sound weird at all. There are guys that knew they wanted to do it when they were six.
Well, I'll tell you something strange about it. This will, surely tell my age. But, you know, like most my age used to like to watch the Gidget movies and the Beach movies, and they wanted to be like those girls. And I watched the Dick Van Dyke Show, and I wanted to be Sally Rogers.
Oh, nice.
Because I thought she had the best job in the world. She just is in an office and writes jokes all day. And I thought, man, I want to be her. And, you know, I was just always fascinated by comedy, and I wanted to do it. I would write things and, actually read them to people just to see if they would laugh. And I did that in school, and just always. But when I got married and had kids and grandkids, and it's just not something a woman does, to run off and be a comedian.
Well, that's exactly right, and that kind of leads me into what it is I was going to ask you next. A lot of people aren't going to see a lot of women on the stage, and it's
right.
Not because they're women aren't talented or funny. It's because their requirements in life are different. You know,
exactly.
Like you said, children and things like that. How is it different for you, kind of, I hate to say it, it's almost a boys' club in a lot of ways. I don't think a lot of guys feel that way, but I know it's out there a little bit. How does it work being a woman in a profession that's dominated by men?
Well, first of all, you have to grow some balls.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've done that. A nice set, I might add.
You're a hermaphrodite now.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
But you're definitely right. It is a boys' club. But, you know, I look at it like if you want to do something bad enough, you'll just kind of overlook that and do what you got to do to get there, you know? And I have to say, though, for the most part, I was treated very, or have been treated very fairly, because there were a lot of women in that owned a comedy club, booked a comedy club, and they were good about booking women into the club. And then there's also the people with the attitude. A lot of men believe that women just aren't funny, and we have to go out and prove ourselves more than a man does. I mean, if a man and woman walk up on stage, they're going to want to hear what the man has to say. He's the funny one.
Hmm. And do you notice that you're approached in like one of two ways? Either you get somebody that's extremely, like, they're going overboard to try to prove to you that there's no problem between you and them, and then the other guys that are just totally insensitive to kind of the fact that you're there. Does that make sense? Like, they're either treating you like crap because you're a woman, or they've gone so far overboard, like the guys that say, you know, I've got a black friend.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying? They overcompensate.
Right.
And do you find it hard to find people that just hit you in the middle and just treat you like a person?
Not so much anymore. I got to say, in the beginning, it was more like that. But now, not so much. Now they, just kind of act like I'm one of the guys.
Nice.
For the most part.
And how old's your youngest grandchild or your oldest one?
My oldest grandchild is 18.
Oh, so you've got, have your grandchildren seen your act?
Yes, I have a 11 and 12-year-old grandsons also. Of course, they've seen the, the cleaned up version, the younger ones.
Yeah. And I know I have the show business curse with my kids. All three of them want to be in show business. Are you creating that problem in your family tree?
No, unfortunately. Well, my one grandson's pretty funny, and I think he could lean towards being a comedian. But so far, my granddaughter has no ambition at all to do anything. So I'd be happy if she wanted to be, a clown or anything. But
sure.
At this point, she doesn't seem to know if she wants to do anything in life.
Well, not many people that age really are all that focused.
Right,
so.
Right.
They call that age-appropriate behavior?
And some people just call it lazy.
Yeah, well, which means you and I are because I think I'm pretty close to your age, are doing age-inappropriate behavior.
We're out
running around, goofing off, and actually it's great. It's like going back to a second childhood for me.
Yes, it is. And we get paid for it.
Yes, and that's the part that really amazes me. Every week I expect them to go, really, thanks for coming out, but we just don't feel we should pay you at all. It just wasn't worth it. I was going to also ask you, when there's not a lot of modeling, so to speak, for female comedians. I mean, granted, you started later, like you said, but back when you were growing up, you had very few. Gal that played Sally on Dick Van Dyke Show, I don't know if she's a comic, but comes to mind, Phyllis Diller, Joan Rivers,
Exactly.
The list is very short.
Right.
So were you influenced primarily by female comics, or are there male comics that are your heroes? Who is it that kind of influenced you in a great deal?
Well, I have to say it wasn't just female comics. It was just all comedy. I remember, I guess I was just so fascinated by it that on the variety shows, going as far back as Ed Sullivan, when there was a comic on, my mom and dad would always call me into the room because they knew I wanted to see the comedian. And, I remember early on, I love people like Jonathan Winters and later the Smothers Brothers, and of course Phyllis Diller, but just all comedy. I wanted to see anybody doing stand-up that I could see. That it just fascinated me. Anybody doing comedy, whether it be a man or a woman or a group or, a duo or what.
Right, and when you first got a chance to see live comedy, and mm-hmm. we went from being TV clean, which are the kind of influence you're talking about, you know, Flip Wilson,
right,
that kind of stuff, to what actually happens in a club, was that a big shock to you, or did you kind of embrace it right away?
Oh, no, I kind of just followed it all the way through as it progressed. You know, I mean, between comedy albums and then, some of the early comedy shows on TV, when there was a lot of comedy, like, I don't know, early 80s. So it just kind of progressed. It wasn't shocking or anything that it went from, you know, totally clean to more R-rated. It just kind of made the transition, and I was fine with it.
Okay. And when you talk about the different influences and your material is not the typical, you know, guys put the toilet seat down kind of thing.
Right.
Except for the gift bag. I feel that's very feminine. And
I know people are always sitting there going, what's in the gift bag?
Well, they're just going to have to wait.
Right.
Because it's last.
Yeah.
That's, you save the gift for last, and that's what it is.
The gift is my closer.
Yes, it is. That's what they call it. Which is ironic because you're actually opening the gift.
Right.
To close. Where does your material come from? Is it just your observations on life, or do you sit down and try to come up with something? I mean, how do you actually write it?
Okay, well, I wish I could say I was one of those people who got up every morning and wrote from 8 to noon, you know.
Yeah.
And sat and wrote new jokes every day. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen that way. Most of the stuff that's in my act are things that people have actually said or done that strike me as funny, and I write that down. You know, or just a behavior or a comment or something, and that's where most of it comes from. As far as just sitting down and go, okay, I'm going to write a joke today, you know. Of course, I did that when I first did the open mics. You know, I had to sit down and write, you know, 3 jokes or 3 minutes of material. And I did that in the beginning, but I don't know. It's just easier if I just see things happening around me and then something strikes me as funny and I'm like, okay, I'm going to make a note about that.
Sure. And,
does that sound weird?
No, you know what? There, you're right. There are different ways people are disciplined to write their material, and I'm kind of an in-between. Sometimes I'll sit down and just write. Other times it's just something that pops into my head while I'm driving. I have more, I don't know where yours actually happens, but I have more ideas come to me when I'm in the shower or running, both times where I have no pencil, and I have forgotten more material than I ever have written.
I don't have to worry about running, so I do shower though. A lot of times it's in the car because you just have so much time,
right,
and you think about things, and then it almost gets crazy. You're in the car too long driving, and you think something's hysterically funny, and then you write it down, and you get home and go, you know, that wasn't as funny now that I'm home. While I was driving and hallucinating, it was hysterical. But I do want to mention that because a lot of people think female comedy, female comedian, it's all male bashing. And
right.
You kind of mentioned that. I try to be equal. Like, you know, I do make fun of my husband a lot, but, I make fun of me, too. So, I try to keep it even. I make fun of men and women.
Sure. Well, and your husband's not there, so it's
and
your
he's not
title.
There, so I can do whatever I want.
Exactly. And how does your husband feel about you being gone all the time? That's got to be a strain. That's got to be a strain of some sort.
Well, you know, we've been married almost 28 years, so it's not that hard on him. actually, he encouraged me when I first wanted to do comedy, and he was, you know, I thought, oh, how sweet, he's encouraging me to go fulfill my dream. And then I realized he just wanted me to be gone for long periods at a time. And he didn't care if I went to truck driving school or whatever, but, oh, you're going to be on the road for a while? Oh, okay, well, go ahead. Do what you like, honey.
Well, but in all fairness, I'm sure he worries about you. Is it tough for him to have you gone for a while? I mean, does he worry? I'm sure he does, but does he openly tell you he's worried about you when you're gone?
No, he doesn't openly tell me that because I think he knows that if I thought he was worried, then I would be worried about him worrying.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
So he's like real cool about it. Like, yeah, everything's fine. And, you know, he's very self-sufficient. You know, he cooks way better than I do. He knows how to do laundry. He's not sitting around going, oh, what am I going to do? She's not here. I don't know how to cook or, you know what I mean? He knows how to take care of things. And actually, one thing he does when I'm on the road, if there is something going on at home, with one of the, you know, the kids or the grandkids. And, I mean, it's not a matter of life or death. I mean, he just purposely doesn't tell me if he thinks it's something that's going to bother me because he doesn't want to upset me while I'm out there.
Sure.
Isn't that nice?
That is nice. It's very hard to keep a relationship going. So you're very fortunate.
Yes, I am.
To have somebody
I'm very
like
lucky
that.
To have the much maligned Mr. Stedman.
Now, does he go on the road with you ever?
You know what he does? I'll tell you what he does. I work in Las Vegas about four times a year. He saves all his vacation time for my trips to Vegas. And I, you know, because he doesn't want to waste vacation time going to, like, you know, Cedar Rapids, Iowa or,
right,
you know, Kansas or, he does do some little weekend. If I do a weekend trip, he'll go with me. But most of his vacation time is for when I work in Vegas.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it is. It's perfect, actually. I mean, you know, we appreciate each other more, not being up each other's butt 24 hours a day.
Sure. So your time together is more valuable.
Yes, it is.
Do you think that you could have done this and been in the relationship with the same guy, of course, when you'd been married 5 years?
No, not at all.
Okay.
First of all, in those early years, I was just out of my mind. I had severe PMS at the time. I would have been like a psycho comic or something.
You'd have been the Sam Kinison of women.
Yes, I would have, but I might have actually hurt somebody. So I had too many hormone problems back then. But yeah, it definitely worked out with me being older. You know, you don't worry about things as much. But what's odd for me is, I mean, back when I was, you know, married early, I would have been afraid to drive across the river in downtown St. Louis by myself. And to think that, you know, years later I would be driving all across the country in towns that I've, you know, never been, was just amazing to me because I used to be afraid of everything.
Wow.
You know?
So you've, being a comic, you had grown to a certain point to get you enough to be a comedian, then this has really springboarded you on to other, to be, I guess, I'll call it a better person or more strong,
so.
A stronger person, I guess.
Yes. And I believe that, you know, there's not too many people out there who get to do what they really, truly love for a living.
Yeah.
But,
well, that's certainly not, there are guys that hate comedy. I mean, they're out there, and I know some guys that are really jaded that they're just miserable to be on the road. And I still
exactly.
love going. I still love going. I mean, I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks coming up here, leaving today, and I couldn't be happier. But, you know, I guess I'm like you. I think I've been doing it just about the same amount of time, and it still feels fresh to me. Even after all the years I've been doing it, it still
right.
feels good.
Yeah, I don't really like to be away from home 2 or 3 weeks in a row. I like to come home in between, you know, like go to one gig, maybe be home for a few days, then go out again. I mean, but I can't always do that. But, yeah, there are a lot of very bitter and angry people out there that aren't happy doing this anymore, and maybe they should do something else.
Yeah, absolutely right, and make room for the guys who really want to work.
Right,
that's
right.
What I've always said. So now we get to the portion of the show here, the the fun part, because you know a comic loves a train wreck. So I'm wondering if you'd be willing to tell us about your worst show ever.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, it's not really that funny. It was just horrible. Well, first of all, I got to say one of the most interesting shows I did was at a nudist resort.
Really?
Right.
Did you have to perform nude?
No, everybody asked me that, and I found out that I couldn't, because they said it would be considered erotic entertainment. And I said, you know, if you saw me naked, you would call it comedy. She would change that, but no, everybody else was naked, and these are all people, Vilmos, that you don't want to see naked,
right? The classic people that are really naked really should be, they aren't. Yeah,
they should have, like, you know, tarps thrown over them or something. But they were, you know, naked people have to laugh too. So was one of the most interesting ones.
We've got to go back to this. Was kids too at this show, or was it all adults?
No, the kids weren't at the show, thank God. But I did find out that it's it was a family nudist place that, you know, during the summer, you know, bring the whole family, and they have all the activities, boating and, you know, just all the swimming and all the things that you would normally do. Well, not swimming. You don't swim with all your clothes on, but it was a family thing, which I can't imagine. But the show was adult. It was just hard for me. I get distracted real easy, and I was afraid that I would be up there, like, telling a joke, and then I saw something move, or I'd be like, what the hell was that? Where was I?
Oh, man. That's incredible. I can't imagine it.
Well, it was something, and you know, because you know how they say, if you're nervous on stage, imagine your audience naked.
Yeah.
And I was doing my best to try to imagine them with clothes on. Because I was thinking, this guy would definitely look better and fully dressed.
Well, the only thing they're wearing is their gold chains.
Oh, but you know what? Some people, it was funny, because some would just wear their socks. Or a hat, or even just a shirt, but they decided, you know, for the show, they had to keep their pants off.
Really?
Yes. It was really odd.
Oh, man. That sounds, you know, that would almost, I think that would almost qualify as a worst show, but you can tell, so your worst experience was really just horrific?
Yeah, and it wasn't that long ago, actually. I mean, to me, it was one of the worst ones, because it was one of those deals where I went to the comedy club, and, you know, before I got there, they said, hey, we have a couple extra shows set up for you this weekend, and it's at a country club, and they didn't really tell me much about it. They just said, do you want to do them? And I said, well, if you think I'm right for them. One was on a Friday night, like in between my regular shows, and one was on a Saturday night. The Friday night one I went and did, and it was small. It was just, you know, people like 40 and up, and they were all drinking, and they had a good time, and I thought, okay, this wasn't bad. And they said the next night I would be coming back to the same country club, and it would be a different group of people, and it would be a larger group. So the next night I come back, and I'm looking around, and I don't see anybody in there under 70. I'm thinking, okay, you know, I don't know what's going on. So I said, who am I performing for? And they go, well, there's this group that hired a comedian. They're having a dinner. And I looked at them, and they're all, you know, probably all over 70. And basically it was a bunch of old, extremely rich and snooty people. And right before I went out there to perform, the guy from the country club says, oh, by the way, you know the stuff you did last night? Well, you can't really do that now. You have to do something else.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, right before, I said, well, I don't know what I'm going to do then, because I don't have a whole different act for these people. And it was horrible, because I went out there, and they're all at their dinner tables, finishing eating, and all dressed up and expecting Bob Hope or Red Skelton.
And, Dorothy L'Amour.
Yes, and I try to do some jokes, and I'm editing as I go, as I'm going, because I'm thinking, okay, I can't do the Beyonce joke. They don't know who she is, and I can't do this, and I'm just kind of mumbling, and I thought, well, I'll get them to talk to me. I'll get them involved, and we'll play around with the audience a little bit. They didn't want to do that.
Oh, man.
They just wanted to look at me with disdain. And it was horrible. I felt like I wanted to just be swallowed up into the floor. I mean, I never saw an audience that hated me more. And I ended up actually not even doing a whole show because I had to edit everything out. I mean, you know, you tell me 5 minutes before I go out there that I can't do what I did the night before. Somebody should have told me that way in advance, and I probably would have turned down the gig.
Right.
But, you know, it's one of those shows. It's probably the only show I ever did where I end up apologizing to them for my act. And I'm going, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you had to witness this. I'm sorry this isn't what you wanted.
Wow.
And that was pretty horrible.
I did
They're
a 50th.
Being basically the wrong person for the type of show they wanted.
Yeah. Well, I had that happen. I did a 50th school reunion. 50th graduate, you know, graduating class of 1920-something or whatever it was. And there was a gal in the front row that actually crossed herself and had her head bowed. She was praying for me. Because I asked her, I said, are you praying for me? She goes, yeah, surely you're going to hell. I said, well. Yeah. And this was in my town.
Oh, my God.
This was in the small town I live in. They actually called me up and said, hey, we know you're a comic. We want to hire you for... you know, a show for our reunion. It's our 50th year reunion. And there were about 40 of them. And it was at the local VFW hall. You know how elegant those places are. And I said, I'm really not the kind of guy that you want to come do the show because I have an act that's mostly for a club and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. No, you'll be fine. We all know you because they all still lived in town. So that's the beauty of that show. I get to see all these people on a regular basis when I'm walking around town.
Oh, my God. And they're probably still praying for you.
Yeah, especially the lady up front. I just had a great time with that.
Well, you know, when I did that country club, it was like Shades of Caddyshack where Rodney Dangerfield's at the country club. And you know, all the snooty people are looking at him and he's making jokes at each table.
Oh, that's so funny.
That's what I felt like.
Oh, God. And did they complain about you?
I didn't stick around long enough. I just said, there was one old guy that came up and said, I thought you were really funny. Oh, you're the one. Thank you. He goes, and then he said, you know, a lot of these people are older than me and they didn't think it was that funny. I'm thinking, Jesus, what are they, 90? So the young guy liked me. The guy that was 75 liked me.
Oh, man, that's funny.
That was pretty funny. I mean, you know, a lot of people have more horrible stories than that, but one comic I worked with just told me the worst horror story ever, and, I mean, his tops everybody, so mine's pretty mild.
Well, you know, they do get kind of strange. I had a show where I actually walked 600 bikers, if you can imagine that.
Were you what?
I walked 600 bikers.
Oh.
I watched 600 people file out of the out of the room. By the time I got finished, all that was left were the people that were waiting to put up the chairs. And they were checking they were checking their watch every few minutes.
Oh, my God.
Because they knew when
worst.
I was supposed to finish. Well, that's not even my worst show, actually. But... anyway, this isn't about me. When you've been out on the road, I kind of look for an unusual road story, but we kind of had that one already with the nudist colony. Have you had any weird
stuff?
Yeah,
that was probably my most unusual. I don't have, you know, I wish I could say I had some really funny stories to tell, but Well, I don't, but I had a strange thing happen just last week in Kansas, which I'm sure a lot of strange things happen in Kansas, but the show Saturday night was kind of weird because there was a guy in the front, right in the front, directly in front of me, by himself. He looked like he was about, I don't know, 58, and he just stared at me the whole time and didn't laugh. It was very distracting because he was so close to me. And you know, it's funny how when you're on stage and you're doing your act, but you can think about other things. I'm doing my jokes, and I'm looking at this guy thinking, he looks like a serial killer. and he did to me. And then after the show, I couldn't wait for it to be over. He comes up, and he wants to buy a CD because he thought I was so funny.
Really? I hate people like that. That's happened to me before.
I do, too. And then he tells me, which he starts offering this information I thought was kind of odd. He says, yeah, I like to come here once in a while, but I don't live here. I have two homes. I said, oh. And he goes, yeah, one's here, one's Virginia. Again, bragging. And then he, you know, I didn't ask him anything. And he says, well, you know, I'm with the FBI.
I said, oh.
He goes, I'm a profiler. Okay, thanks for sharing that. And my thought is, I hear, it's so funny that he said that because the whole time I'm on stage, I'm thinking he looks like a serial killer. He looks like somebody that would be profiled. And then he tells me, so that's, you know, that's just kind of the weird little things that happen. You know, certain people can just kind of creep you out.
Do you think that was his way of hitting on you?
Well, yeah, there's nothing that, you know, would excite me more than going out with a guy who, you know, who likes to get into the mind of serial killers.
Well, aside from the fact you're married, I'm sure you wouldn't go anyway. Do you
right,
have,
exactly.
Do you have a lot of guys? You know, I've never asked a woman this question. Guys, as you know, the women don't really hit on comics. I mean, everybody thinks a comic has a woman in every town. And, you know, there's that very small percentage that are, that may be able to find girls here and there. But, you know, what's it do you get a lot of interest from audience members? I mean, are they hitting on you constantly when they're leaving?
Well, first of all, Vilmos, you've seen me. I'm not.
Don't say that. You're an attractive woman.
Well, you know,
woman.
I'm
Stop
just
that.
Let's just say I'm a cougar.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I got to say the people who do kind of hit on me are extremely drunk. Or creepy. But no, I don't really, I don't think I give off a vibe like, you know, that I'd be interested. I think, because a friend told me that. I have a friend who is very friendly on the road.
Uh-huh.
And we've talked about her. You probably know who I'm talking about. She does hook up with a lot of the guys after
really?
The show.
You're going to have to give me her name so I can get her into the club.
No, she's been at your club.
She has?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
But anyway.
Damn it, I don't know who it is.
Yeah, well, you want to get her right in now. Since
well,
you're,
yeah,
it's
or,
easy.
Or get in right now, whichever way you want to put it.
Right.
It doesn't matter to me.
But she told me once that I don't give that, she goes, I almost give a vibe like, don't even come up and talk to me. Not like I'm stuck up or something, but she said, you just don't, I have something that's like a repellent, I guess, with men, is what she's trying to tell me.
Well, that's not, I don't know. A lot of people don't notice. Some people just don't notice when they're, do you think that's it?
A lot of people don't know what
that
do
somebody's
mean?
Actually trying to hit on them. They don't notice
yeah,
it happening.
I think that happens to me because people say something and I'll say something to another comic and they go, they were trying to hit on you. I mean, so long, I've been married almost 28 years. I don't know what the lines are that people use these days other than I'm a profiler.
I'm a profiler and, oh, by the way, what's your sign?
Right. Yeah, I see. I can't keep up with these young people today. I don't know when somebody's hitting on me or not. So maybe I'm getting hit on all the time and I don't even know it.
Well,
almost.
I think that's because you've been married so long and just have no reason to even think about it. So
exactly.
That's a good thing. Well, listen, our time is finished pretty much, and I want to know if you have anything else you might like to add. I mean, don't feel like you should.
You know what? That's what my husband says to me after sex. When we're having sex, he goes, you know, our time is almost finished, and is there anything else you'd like to add? Sounds like lovemaking in our house.
Geez, well, I guess I'll have to end on that note.
Listen, I have nothing to add. I just can't wait to come to Denver.
Oh, you're going to have a great time. Our crowds are just going to absolutely love you. I had so much fun working with you in Fort Wayne. It was kind of funny because that was really an awkward week for me, and I know that you probably felt a little awkward that I was there that week. So that was kind of a strange thing. But it was
It was fun. I'm disappointed that you're not going to be working with me this week.
Yeah, well, you know, I wouldn't mind that, but you're going to be working with some really funny people too. And,
okay.
And our staff is great. Our staff is very much looking forward to having you in there. I heard that from the club, not just because you're new, but because you're a woman. And, you know, we try to get in as many female comics as we can. But like I was saying at the beginning, you know, the pool is just a little smaller. And it's harder. And, you know, just because you're a woman doesn't mean you're absolutely going to make it into the club. Because, you know, we have standards for the kind of comedy we want and, the kind of people that we want in. And we just won't accept just anybody. So
good. I feel special.
Well, yeah, because honestly, the truth is just because you have a vagina doesn't mean you're going to be working at Wits End Comedy Club.
How many times have I heard that?
Well, I know it's the old same old story, isn't it? So
right.
It's been a great time with you. I really appreciate you taking your time to do this, and thank you very much.
Okay.
And for
thanks for having me.
You bet. And for those of you that are listening, Christine is going to be here Wednesday, June the 11th, till Saturday, June the 14th. We have shows Wednesday and Thursday at 8 o'clock, Friday at 8 and 10:30. Saturday is 5:30, 8 o'clock, and a 10:30 show. Make sure you come out and see. You can go to our website if you haven't been there yet. It's www.witsendcomedyclub.com. You can make your reservation online. Put in the word podcast under the offer code. So that you can get a special rate that they'll work out for you. And next week, the only Swede we have that comes into the club to work every year, Leif Skiving, will be with us. So thanks very much for listening to The Green Room. I'm Vilmos. Remember, go out and see a live comedy show. If you're not in Denver, go to a club near you. Thanks.